Turning now to election news, mentioned that this is the final week of the filing period for candidates running for office this year in Orange County. We're also looking ahead to next year, of course, very important midterm election coming up. We're starting to get some sense of where the two parties stand heading into 2022, just with special elections and primaries and some local elections happening across the country. We've talked recently with Tom Jensen of Public Policy Polling about where the Republican Party stands. Now we're going to turn to the other side of the aisle and focus on the Democrats. Tom Jensen is the director of public policy polling based out of Raleigh. Publicpolicypolling.com is their website, and you can get more news and analysis on Twitter as well at PPP Polls. Joining us on the phone this morning to talk about the Democrats, Tom, thanks for being with us today. Good morning.
Hey, Aaron. Good to be with you.
So what is the state of the Democratic Party right now? We're getting some indications from primaries. We've had some local elections. The mayor of New York City had the primary election for that. That was very high profile. What are we gleaning from all of this?
So I think the biggest story in the Democratic Party over the last year, especially since the murder of George Floyd, has been that Democratic voters are more and more looking toward nominating black candidates in primaries for important offices. We started to see really a fascinating trend sort of from early June on when that happened last year, where anytime we were pulling on a primary election for Congress or something like that, you always have a bunch of voters who are undecided a month out or so because people don't know who the candidates are. And we were without fail finding that the undecided voters in these key primaries were strongly moving towards supporting black candidates for those offices. And we've seen a similar trend in elections so far in 2021. As you noted, New York City, Eric Adams won the primary for mayor there. He'll be, assuming he gets elected in the fall, which he will be, he'll be only New York City's second black mayor ever. And then in some smaller places like Pittsburgh and Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, we saw incumbent mayors get voted out of office in both of those cities in the Democratic primary. And at least in the Pittsburgh case, the mayor wasn't even unpopular, but voters just preferred to nominate a black candidate in this political climate to nominate a white candidate. So I think that probably also has significant implications for our Senate primary here in North Carolina.
Yeah, because we've got two high-profile, well, several fairly high-profile candidates on the Democratic side, but two in particular, Sherry Beasley and Jeff Jackson, and that's good news for Sherry Beasley, I would assume.
Yeah, it is. I definitely think that gives her a leg up because it's really a situation we're seeing where it's not just black voters who are wanting to nominate black candidates. I mean, that's something we're seeing overwhelmingly from white voters as well. So somebody like Sherry Beasley gets a big chunk of the 33% of voters in a Democratic primary who are black in North Carolina and then also wins the white voters. It's a pretty good formula for a good victory. And we also did see in the last week, as long as we're on this topic, both Sherry Beasley and Jeff Jackson did a really good job raising money in the last quarter, sort of a continuation of the impressive job that Democrats did raising money across the country last year. So I think that's just further confirmation that whoever emerges from the Sherry Beasley, Jeff Jackson contest, Democrats are going to have a very well-funded candidate, and it's probably going to be once again, one of the most closely contested Senate races in the country. So we seem to sort of be at the center of the national dialogue election after election, and it may well be the case again this time.
Par for the course in North Carolina. Speaking with Tom Jensen, Public Policy Polling, and you mentioned that that New York City mayor's race, kind of the other interesting aspect of that race was the fact that New York City was trying out ranked choice voting for the first time, which is something that a lot of election advocates have been pushing for to give kind of third party minor parties an opportunity to at least make their voices heard in a way that they otherwise wouldn't be able to. Kind of mixed results from that in New York City. What do we take from that experiment in the Democratic primary?
Well, I think ranked choice voting was really confusing for people. I was in New York City in May, and there was this signage all over the place trying to help people understand ranked choice voting by having them rank their New York City landmarks. So favorite New York City landmarks. So maybe you say the Statue of Liberty is your number one favorite landmark, but overall it doesn't do too well. And let's say your second choice is the Empire State Building, and that doesn't do too well either. But your third choice is Carnegie Hall. So then after the Statue of Liberty and the Empire State Building have been removed, then maybe your vote goes to Carnegie Hall. It's something that people who are super political junkies, I think, find really appealing, but it was something that was a lot harder for average voters. And we particularly experienced that with trying to pull city council races with ranked choice voting in New York. We found that, and this was 2-3 weeks before the election, about 50% of people didn't even have a first choice for city council, and then 75% of people didn't even have a second choice for city council. And voters were being asked to rank five choices when half of them didn't have a first choice and three-fourths of them didn't have a second choice. So I think it's a little too complicated for the average voter. It'll be interesting to see how it continues to get deployed across the country. It's the sort of thing where maybe you can use it for something like mayor that's pretty high profile and have people be able to cast an informed vote. But once you get down to those smaller offices, unless you're a super political junkie, which very few people are, you just don't know five candidates who you want to rank for something like city council. And I think that we particularly saw that turnout dropped off some among lesser educated voters, voters of color in this election, who I think might have been turned off by the confusion, whereas voters in Manhattan from upper scale white precincts really had their votes enhanced because they, you know, really sort of rolled with the system. And I don't know if that improves small D democracy outcomes or not.
Speaking with Tom Jensen, Public Policy Polling, and as we wrap up, the other kind of divide within the Democratic Party is between kind of moderates who are closer to the center and more progressive candidates who are further to the left. What are we seeing as far as that goes when it comes to the elections and primaries and things in 2021? Is there one side that's doing better than the other?
Well, the thing that was really interesting in New York City is that both of the candidates who ended up being the top two were sort of on the more moderate side of the spectrum within that New York City race. The candidates who are further to the left really didn't do that well. And in a way, it was reflective of the presidential primary last year, where there were all of these compelling candidates who were sort of more to the left. But Democrats ended up nominating the more centrist, sort of more institutional choice in Joe Biden. One thing about Eric Adams, the Democratic nominee now for mayor of New York City, is that he's a former police officer, and he ran talking about crime a lot, and in particular said that he thought that the idea of defunding the police was really dumb. And that defund the police is something that really hurt Democrats, letting themselves sort of be associated with that rhetoric last year, I think cost them a lot of congressional and legislative seats. We did a really interesting poll over the winter in Minneapolis, which obviously sort of the defund the police movement in some ways really got a shot in the arm from the aftermath of George Floyd's killing. And we asked people in Minneapolis, do you support going from 800 police officers to 700 police officers? So not defunding the police really, but just a small reduction. Voters said by 25 points in Minneapolis, which voted for Biden 86-11, that they opposed any cut in the police force. So even in a super liberal city, you have very little appetite for cutting the police, defunding the police. I wouldn't be surprised if we polled Chapel Hill if people said they were opposed to cutting the police force. I mean, it's really something that is a fringe view. Voters in Carrboro might be okay with it. So this is something where Democrats sort of got themselves off the ledge, and nominating Adams in somewhere as liberal as New York, I think, shows the extent to which average voters in the party want to stay away from that sort of rhetoric.
I was going to ask about Carrboro, but you jumped the gun on that. publicpolicypolling.com is the website. Go there and find out more information, news and analysis on Twitter as well, at PPP Polls. Tom Jensen, as always, thank you so much.
Thanks, Aaron. Take care.